Blog Talk Radio.
The more important context of this language concerns the U.S. role in liaising with the Ukraine opposition parties with a view, it seems, to manipulate the orientation of the Ukraine government in accordance with U.S. interests. Well, that's for sure. You know, it's really... Rather than leaving the future of Ukrainian politics up to the Ukrainian people, as claimed in the official announcement, the conversation suggests active U.S. government interference to favor certain opposition leaders. And they've copied some texts on that. And it was a BBC correspondent, Jonathan Marcus, who rightly observes this alleged conversation, and he said, all about this quoted conversation, suggests that the U.S. has very clear ideas about what the outcome should be in the Ukraine and is striving to achieve these goals. Washington clearly has its own game plan, with various officials attempting to marshal the Ukrainian opposition in efforts to get the U.N. to play an active role in bolstering the deal. U.S. efforts to turn the political tide in Ukraine away from Russia and their influence began much earlier, and I was shocked about this. In 2004, the Bush administration had given $65 million to provide democracy training to opposition leaders and political activists aligned with them, including paying to bring opposition leader Viktor Yushchenko to meet U.S. leaders and help underwrite exit polls indicating he won disputed elections. This program has accelerated under Obama. In a speech at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. last December, as Ukraine's Maidan Square clashes escalated, Nuland confirmed that the U.S. has invested in a total of over $5 billion to ensure and secure and prosperous and democratic Ukraine. She specifically congratulated the Euromaidan movement. So it would be naive to assume that this magnitude of U.S. support to organizations politically aligned with the Ukraine opposition played no role in fostering the pro-Euro-Atlantic movement as it ultimately culminated in Russian-backed President Yanukovych's departure. Indeed, in her 2013 speech, Nuland added, "Today there are special senior officials in the Ukraine government, in the business community, as well as in the opposition, civil society, and religious community who believe in this democratic and European future for their country. And they've been working hard to move their country and their president in the right direction." What direction might that be? A glimpse of an answer was provided over a decade ago by Professor Craig Nation, Director of Russian and Eurasian Studies at the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. In a NATO publication, this is what he said: "Ukraine is increasingly perceived to be critically situated in the emerging battle to dominate energy transport corridors linking the oil and natural gas reserves of the Caspian Basin to European markets. Considerable competition has already emerged over the construction of pipelines. Whether Ukraine will provide alternative routes, helping to diversify access as the West would prefer, or find itself forced to play the role of a Russian subsidiary remains to be seen." So, a more recent U.S. State Department-sponsored report noted that Ukraine's strategic location between the main energy producers, Russia and the Caspian Sea area, and consumers in the Eurasian region, its large transit network, and its available underground gas storage capacity make the country a potentially crucial player in European energy transit, a position that will grow as Western Europe demands for Russia and the Caspian gas and oil continues to increase. So this goes on, quite a long article. And if you're interested in it, it's Earth Insight by Nafis Ahmed, and it's hosted by The Guardian. It's from The Guardian. So check that out, folks. It's very good. Good article. And there's another one that I had that I wanted to get to. It's quite interesting. It's on
I'm going to
Why London 2 will balk at sanctions against Russia. I thought this was interesting. And Putin knows it. You know, we want to have all these sanctions. Nobody's going to support it. A week ago, when the idea of sanctions against Russia was first officially announced, we made a statement which was obviously in jest, yet which, as so often happens, was so rooted in reality. How is this an indication of reality? You still have that on. That's why there's an echo.
Okay.
Get to turn it off.
Well,
yes, you can, because we have this one on. Well, for one, as reported previously, the one country that has the most to lose from Russian sanctions, Germany, and specifically its industrial super lobby, has already said nein to any truly crippling trade bloc of Moscow, which would backfire on Germany's own economy and bottom line. But what about London? Here, the New York Times explains why, once again, it was all about the money and why we were right, even when we were being humorous. The White House has imposed visa restrictions on some Russian officials, and President Obama has issued an executive order enabling further sanctions. But Britain has already undermined any unified action by putting profit first. It boils down to this. Britain is ready to betray the United States to protect the city of London's hold on dirty Russian money, and forget about the Ukraine. It's an interesting kind of article on Follow the Money Trail. Let's see. Let me finish this.
Are you done there?
No, I'm going to... The White House has imposed visa restrictions on some Russian officials, and President Obama has issued an executive order enabling further sanctions. But Britain has already undermined any unified action by putting profit first. It boils down to this. Britain is ready to betray the United States to protect the city of London's hold on dirty Russian money. And forget about Ukraine. At this point, in standing with the ideological framework of the host media outlet, the author takes a detour into naive realism, a world in which it is not money that talks, but a declining global superpower whose hypocrisy has been exposed time and time again, and where extinct words like mission and moral are used with reckless abandon. Britain, open for business, no longer has a mission. Any moralizing remnant of the British Empire is gone. It is turned back to pirate England of Sir Walter Raleigh. Britain's ruling class has decayed to the point where its first priority is protecting its cut of Russian money. Even as Russian armored personnel carriers rumble around the streets of Sevastopol. But the establishment understands that in the 21st century, what matters are banks, not tanks. Well, that's the truth. They get away with everything. The Russians also understand this. They know that London is the center of Russian corruption, that their loop plunges into the British Empire of tax havens, from Gibraltar to Jersey, from the Cayman Islands to the British Virgin Islands, on which the sun never sets. British residency is up for sale. Investor visas can be purchased starting at £1 million, that's $1.6 million. London lawyers in the commercial court now get 60% of their work from Russian and Eastern European clients. More than 50 Russian-based companies swell the trade at the London Stock Exchange. The planning regulations have been scrapped along the Thames. Up go spires of steel and glass for hedge funding class. Britain's bright young things now become consultants, art dealers, private bankers, and hedge funders. Or to put it another way, the oligarch's valets. Russian President Vladimir Putin gets it. You pay them, you own them. Mr. Putin was absolutely certain that British managers, shuttling through the revolving door between cabinet posts and financial boards, would never give up their fees and commissions from the oligarch billions. He was right. So let us get this straight. It is great when the Russian oligarchs invest their stolen money in luxury London real estate, the FTSE 100, and various other inflating assets, which are mistaken for an improvement in the broader economy. But when the alarm clock of real politicking rings, it was all bad. What we are more stunned by is that while London has at least figured out the quid pro quo, the U.S. and its leaders so far seem completely incapable of doing so. Perhaps someone should explain to Obama that with the Fed tampering, the only incremental buyer of high-end real estate are precisely the oligarchs from Russia, whom he will soon alienate, as well as those from China, which also may decide it's too risky to park hot money in New York triplexes, and instead, once again, like in 2011, park it all in gold and other precious metals. But going back to the New York Times article, the author does make the following accurate observation. This is Britain's only growth business today, laundering oligarchs' dirty billions and laundering their dirty reputation. His conclusion is spot on. The charade encapsulates the new hierarchy of the city. On the top floors, ultra-high net worth individuals entertain escorts in luxury apartments. By day, on floors below, investment bankers trade incomprehensible derivatives. Come nightfall, the elevators are full of African cleaners paid next to nothing and treated as non-existent. The acres of glass windows are scrubbed by Polish laborers who sleep four to a room in bed-split slums. Near the shard are the immigrants from the Lithuania and Romania who broke their backs on construction sites but are now destitute and whiling away their hours along the banks of the Thames. The shard is London, a symbol of a city where oligarchs are celebrated and migrants are exploited, but that pretends to be a multicultural utopia. Here in the capital city, the English are no longer calling the shots. They are the hirelings.
There you go.
Well,
we've got, I guess we'll be coming up in about 10 minutes or so, but I just wanted to make a note just introduce her here. I said that our alternative, tonight our special guest is Catherine Albrecht. She's the co-founder of Caspian Press and SpyChips.com and StartMail.com, and an anonymous email service that keeps your online communications private. Her bio is she's the founder of Consumer Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering, which is Caspian, okay? And CSPIAN, which is the website. And a national consumer organization created in 1999 to educate consumers, citizens, about shopper surveillance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she'll talk a little about
that.
She
was on many times to talk about
that. We've had her on a number of times in the past, but she is consumer privacy advocate and spokesperson against radio frequency identification, RFIDs, and Albert devised the term spy chips to describe RFID tags such as those embedded in passport cards and certain enhanced United States driver's license. Catherine Albrecht also holds a Doctor of Education degree from Harvard University, and she's a resident of Nashua, New Hampshire. Right? And she'll be joining us in about, probably in about 10 minutes or so. She'll be calling in. What I wanted to do tonight is I wanted to touch on a couple of real interesting articles here that came up. And, hold on a second. I posted them on my Facebook so that I could refer back to them quickly. Seems interesting that the CBS chief that says I'll take the network off the air. Right?
For what?
Well, this is very interesting. You know, I'll tell you what. it'd be interesting to I don't think anybody would miss CBS under any circumstances. But the head of CBS is threatening to take his top-rated network off of the air instead of offer TV programs directly to viewers on the Internet. Tuesday, comments from CEO Leslie Moonves Center on the flight involving major broadcasters who are challenging Aereo's use of their broadcast signals without paying for them. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments in the case in April. If there are systems out there that try to hurt us, then we could go to OTT, Moonves says. OTT is an abbreviation for over-the-top, which is, in broadcast jargon, means providing television over the Internet outside of a paid TV subscription. If Aereo should work, if they should win, which we don't think is going to happen, we could go to OTT with CBS, he says. So he'd take another...
I did read about that.
Yeah, he's threatening to take it off the Internet.
Take it off the broadcast.
If the government wants to give them permission to skew our signal, then we will come up with some other way to get them our content and so get paid for it, he added. Aereo is a tiny startup backed by billionaire Barry Diller, which uses an antenna and remote DVR technology to let subscribers watch live local over-the-air TV without making any payments to the program creators. Well, this is not the first time Moonves and other executives are raising the possibility of going off the air and instead using cable subscriptions, and Aereo is given the legal green light. However, such a move would be complicated by implications of its own. The government, for example, granted broadcasters valuable segments of radio frequency spectrum to carry their signals decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, provided that they also offer programming that serves the common good. But moving programs off the airwaves could call into question their hold on spectrum. They're using less and less. Right? So somebody would have to take that vacuum, I'll tell you. And I'm sure there'll be somebody to do it. But CBS has got a tremendous spectrum. You know, on the,
mm-hmm.
the airwaves, you know, the three networks. Meanwhile, CNET says, Aereo Supreme Court case remains a question mark. Last month, a U.S. District Court granted the first preliminary injunction against Aereo out of the patchwork of lawsuits against the company, handing broadcasters their first clear legal win ahead of the Supreme Court appearance.
What do you think about all this?
It says the court's decision will affect Utah, Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Wyoming. Of the 11 cities where Aereo currently operates, Salt Lake City and Denver fall under the decision scope. But similar preliminary injunctions have been denied in New York based on Circuit Court appeal in Boston, and something Aereo has touted as support for its legal status as it heads to the country's highest court. Interesting, huh?
Well, what do you think about that?
I think it's a dare. I mean, they're not gonna back away from their internet, from their.
I don't either.
Because the biggest.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
And then what's gonna happen?
Well, somebody is gonna take over their network. Right?
Their space.
And what'll happen is what happened to Dan Rather. You know, when they got rid of Dan Rather, and he wound up going to,
he wound up going to
some current TV or something. I can't remember.
Something out of Texas.
Nobody's ever seen him since.
That's right.
You know? So, you know, for that reason, you know, that's basically what happened and what's going to happen. Okay, for the to CBS. This is a real.
I think it's a bluff.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of terrible things going on. Obama picks a rabid anti-gun advocate to be Surgeon General. This guy,
so weird.
Yeah, he picks the worst guy. This guy's only 36 years old. He's an Indian guy, right? But he's absolutely anti-gun. This is about a 5-minute thing here. But Vivek Murthy is 36 year old and has not worked in the real world as a physician, but yet
Obama wants to appoint him as the Surgeon General of the United States.
What does having being anti-gun have to be about?
We'll have new developments in the search for that missing airplane in a moment, but first we are learning we could be less than 48 hours now to a full Senate vote on the president's latest controversial cabinet pick, who's not a big fan of the Second Amendment. Welcome to the Kelly File, everyone. I'm Megyn Kelly. We are seeing growing opposition tonight to the man tapped to be America's next Surgeon General, a nomination that could get approved possibly as early as this Wednesday. Dr. Vivek Murthy is the 36-year-old president and co-founder of Doctors for America, a group that used to be called Doctors for Obama, which campaigned for the president and advocates for strict gun control laws, including new Obamacare regulations that would allow doctors to document whether their patients are gun owners. The law specifically prevents that right now. The group's website describes, quote, gun violence as a, quote, public health crisis, all of which has some questioning whether Dr. Murthy's nomination is turning what has always been the job of America's doctor into a hyper-partisan position. Mark Thiessen is a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a columnist for the Washington Post. Mark, first of all, he's 36 years old. He's only been an attending physician for 8 years, which is not long at all, but he does have a long history of supporting President Obama politically.
Yep, that's exactly right. Look, he is too inexperienced and too radical. That's the problem. If you say he's 36 years old, which might be okay if he was an exceptionally qualified 36-year-old, but he's not. I mean, if you look at most past surgeon generals, they've been CEOs of hospitals, chief medical officers. They've run county health systems. Not only has he not run a hospital or a county health system, he hasn't run a medical department within a county hospital or health system. So he is a part-time doctor who's a political activist whose claim to fame, his primary qualification is that he founded Doctors for Obama, which is a group that he uses to push a radical anti-gun agenda. That does not qualify you to be the Surgeon General of the United States.
He is so anti-gun that the NRA has decided to score this vote, which they don't often do. And, I mean, it's on the Surgeon General, right? And so it's like, what, they're scoring the vote on the Surgeon General? But that's how concerned they are about this guy. And he sent out tweets, and this is just one example, criticizing them in the past as well. This is from December of 2012. NRA press conference, disappointing but predictable. Blame everything in the world except guns for the Newtown tragedy. Wake up, he tweeted out. And here's another tweet you can see that we just put on the board. So he is no fan of the NRA. They are no fan of his. How much of an effect is that likely to have?
I think a very big effect. I mean, look, he goes out and says guns are a health issue. No, they're not. They're a constitutional right. The job of the Surgeon General is not to promote gun control. It's to educate people about diseases and disease prevention. Guns are not a disease. He seems to think they are. And the fact is that we've got a situation now where because Harry Reid invoked the nuclear option and took away the filibuster from Republicans, this vote is on the Democrats. This is entirely his nomination will be decided by a 51 vote majority. And so the question is, are pro-gun Democrats, vulnerable Democrats in pro-gun states going to vote to confirm this guy? Because if they do, they're going to be in big trouble in November.
You're 8 years in attending. You know your way around the block, presumably, and he was at Brigham and Women's, which is part of Harvard. But you got a lot to learn. I mean, a lot to learn. That's still considered a young doctor. And now this guy's potentially going to be our Surgeon General. The administration taking more heat tonight over whether this man is qualified, same as they've taken heat, he has taken heat, the president has, over several other nominees, including appointments to ambassadorships, and who could forget this infamous clip of just a few of them that he wanted put in outposts for the United States. Watch.
Mr. Barber, I take it you've been to Iceland?
Sir, I've not had the privilege yet. I look forward to it.
The government has denounced them, the coalition government, they're part of the coalition of the government.
Well, I would say, you know what, I stand corrected.
Have you been to Argentina?
Senator, I haven't had the opportunity yet to be there. I've traveled pretty extensively around the world, but I haven't yet had a chance.
Well, you've been to Norway? I guess, and Val, if you've been to Hungary.
Yes, Senator, I have.
Oh, good gracious. And now we have this guy.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, look, the president has a pattern of picking highly partisan and unqualified nominees. I mean, we just went through this with the Justice Department nominee for the civil rights post who had defended a cop killer. Now you've got these ambassadors. That guy you showed who was ambassador to Norway, it was going to be our ambassador to Norway, didn't know that Norway had a king and not a president. And he's going to be our ambassador.
That is
This isn't like I mean, go to Wikipedia and figure it out. I mean, they didn't even read the Wikipedia entries to their countries. If, you know, I mean, if you're
but they're all big Obama donors. That's one thing they have in common, Mark.
No, that's exactly right. But these aren't Caribbean countries. These are NATO. These are NATO allies. This is a these are major countries, and this is the Surgeon General of the United States, America's doctor. We need qualified, nonpartisan nominees to carry out our foreign policy and to advise Americans on medical issues.
The NRA says it's a matter of trust, and they don't think they or their members are going to trust the Surgeon General, given his statements about guns and the Second Amendment. Mark, good to see you.
It's pretty sad, folks, and very sad. And, this is the best we can do. It's unbelievable. I think our guest is on. And hang on one second. And I want to welcome Catherine Albrecht. And hang on one second. Hello, Catherine. Are you with us?
Hey, I sure am. Hello. It's good to be with you tonight.
Hi, Catherine. Welcome to the OA Steel Show. Nice to have you back again.
Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Well, you always have something new on the horizon and something that you're anxious to talk about.
And we'd like to, we wanted to talk to you, of course, about the new email thing that's coming up there.
Well, I'm so excited about it. We are rolling out a couple thousand brand new beta accounts every week. This is StartMail at startmail.com. The feedback we're getting is absolutely excellent. People love it. It is exactly what Ed Snowden talked about yesterday when he gave his first public talk and discussed the fact that PGP encryption really is good protection. It is the only protection, really, against the NSA and government spying programs. But he then said the problem is it's incredibly hard to use. Most people don't have access to it. They wouldn't know how to use it. And so as a result, they're having to put their information out where it's being compromised. And we are going to be reaching out to Ed Snowden if we can get a hold of him and tell him, hey, we've got the solution, and it's StartMail. We've found we've built from the ground up over 3 years an email program at startmail.com that is fully encrypted, totally private. It has four layers of encryption to keep everybody out, including us. We can't even read your email. And it is easy to use. All you have to do is click literally a checkbox, and the PGP encryption is automatic and just jumps right in and does it for you. There is no other email program on the market that does that. One-click PGP encryption is a brand-new thing, and we are hoping that we can get it out into the hands of everybody in the freedom-loving community, not just in the U.S., but activists and dissidents and people all around the globe who have been oppressed by their governments. So we're really excited. StartMail.com is the website. There's a video up at the top if people would like a quick two-minute overview just to get a sense of what it is. But there's a real need for this, not only because the NSA can read unencrypted email, but because all those supposedly free email services like Google and Yahoo and Outlook, which used to be called Hotmail, all of those free services really aren't free. They come at a high cost, and the high cost is your privacy. And that's because nobody's paying them. See, they're not running advertisements in the email. Nobody's paying them to create that email program. So why in the world would a multinational billion-dollar corporation give you free email? They're not your mom. they're not your best friend. That you have to ask yourself. And I think it's kind of naive of us to think, oh, well, they just want to give me the answer to all my questions through the Google search engine, or they just want to give me free email because why? So once you answer that question, then all of a sudden you begin to realize that there's this real fundamental misconception that we all have about these companies. And the fundamental misconception is that Google is a search engine and that Gmail is email. And the reality, Google is not a search engine. It is a market research tool for them. And Gmail is not email. It is a market research tool for them. And I'll explain how that is. So back in the 1980s, I actually have my undergraduate degree in marketing. And back in the 1980s, we did not yet have an internet, and there was no Google. And I remember one of my professors saying, one of the hardest things you students are ever going to have to do is market research. And you can have focus groups and you can send out surveys, but the reality is people aren't really going to tell you their innermost secrets. So if you want to know who has cancer, if you want to know who has dandruff or a sexually transmitted disease or is going through bankruptcy or a divorce, nobody's going to tell you that. So how do you get to those answers? And that was a big conundrum in the 1980s and the years leading up to it. Well, Google, as a market research firm, hit on the perfect answer to that. What if you created a screen, a window, a box, and you put it in front of every single person in America, and then you ask them to type their innermost secrets into it? Well, I have cancer. Well, I'm going through a divorce. Well, my son is addicted to heroin. How wonderful would that be if we could just get people to type their innermost secrets, every thought that crosses their minds, their vacation information, what size clothes they're buying from the online store, everything. But how are we going to get them to give us all that information? And the answer, of course, the light bulb goes on, well, why don't we instead pretend that we're offering them a service that will answer all their questions?
Uh-huh.
And that way, in the course of typing the questions in, we will get their information from them. So when I'm a breast cancer survivor, and when I found a lump in my breast, had I gone on to Google and said, lump in breast, mammogram services in New Hampshire, then Google would have said, aha, thank you. No way I ever would have known that without her typing it into the screen. In fact, Google would have known that I suspected I had breast cancer before my husband, my mother, my best friend, my neighbors, any my coworkers. Google would have known first. See, and this is why that search engine window that sits in what we think is the private part of our homes. It sits in, you can close the door and draw the shades, you're all alone, you think nobody's looking, you can look around, look over your shoulder, and now you're going to search for that thing that you don't want to tell anybody about. Well, it gives you the impression of privacy because there's no physical human beings around you, but nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, you'd be better off if there was a room full of human beings because at least they have lives and they're going to forget. Google never forgets. When you type something into there, they link it to your identity permanently. They add it to a massive bulging profile of information that they keep on you. As we go into tax season, if people use Gmail and send, for example, because Gmail, their mail program is the same way. The reason they give you mail is not because they want to help you communicate with your friends. It's because there's only so much they could learn from the search engine window, and now they wanted to start learning from what people actually say to one another, because we all know that those social interactions are very revealing. And so that's when they said, aha, in 2004, why don't we expand our market research program by giving people an environment where they will share their most intimate secrets with us in the course of communicating with one another. And so there, if I say to you, I'm really feeling frustrated with my job, I'm really angry with my boss, and you're my best friend, and you're trying to talk me down, well, I may now, 2 days later, be on a completely unrelated website and see an ad for job searches or some resume service. And if they do it cleverly enough, I don't even notice. I'm just like, oh, yeah, I do need, you know, I probably ought to beef up my resume. I'm thinking of quitting my job. Let me click that link. So that's why they do it. That's how they do it. And when in 2004, prior to 2004 with the launch of Gmail, all email was private. There was a full expectation that when, just like postal mail, that no one would open and read your mail. And in 2004, Google came out with its Gmail product because it wanted a bigger platform to suck up your personal information. And when they did that, 31 of us privacy advocates and organizations, I was a signatory on this letter that we sent to Google, and we said, don't do it. If you launch this Gmail program with these terms of service that say you are going to give people these huge email accounts, they were bigger than anything available at the time, and they were very fast, and they were great. But there was a catch, and the catch was huge. The catch was, if you launch these email accounts with those terms of service saying that you can and will scan the contents of every email and use it and put it into a giant profile that you're keeping on people, that's going to not only infringe the privacy of all those users, which is now up to hundreds of millions of people, But it's also going to set a precedent in the marketplace so that the other private email services like Yahoo and Hotmail are going to change their policies to follow suit, and of course they have. So now you've got all of the so-called free email services functioning for the sole reason to create an environment where you will reveal personal information about yourself. And the best analogy I can come up with is last year I was speaking at the Liberty Forum in New Hampshire about StartMail. And StartMail is not going to be free because it costs money to create and run email. And if you think otherwise, wake up, because servers cost money, employees cost money, development costs money, things cost money, customer service costs money. How are you going to pay for that? And the answer is you're either going to pay for it. Somebody is going to be paying the bill. Somebody is going to pay the company creating the email so that they can keep the lights on and keep things running. And they will answer to whoever is paying the bill. That's the boss. So in the case of Gmail, they're answering to their advertisers. So they put their advertisers' interests above those of their users because their users don't pay them one thin dime. They don't owe their users anything. They owe their users nothing. But they owe their advertisers tons of access to juicy personal information on hundreds of millions of people. So in our case, we don't want to owe anything to anyone except the users. So that's the only person we answer to. So StartMail is going to be $5 a month, which is $60 a year. It is it's about half the cost of a book of stamps, which would let you mail 20 postal envelopes that would be private, but you can obviously send unlimited full PGP encrypted email for that. And the best analogy that I can come up with to try to explain this is, so I'm speaking at the Liberty Forum and I say it's going to be $5 a month. And I had some people say, well, why would we pay that if we could get Gmail for free? And I said, well, you're in a hotel here. We were at the Sheraton, I think, in Nashua, New Hampshire. And I said, and a lot of you have flown in and come in from far away. You have hotel rooms in this hotel, and you're paying, what, $150, $200 a night for those hotel rooms. That's a lot of money, isn't it? Oh, yeah. All right, well, what if I were to set up a hotel next door and give you all the rooms for free? In fact, some of them are even suites, and they have jacuzzis and mirrors on the ceiling. They're really nice. So come on over to my hotel, and it's free. There's only one catch. I'm a pornographer. And the reason I'm giving you these free rooms is because I've got cameras in all of them, and I've got microphones in all of them, and I've got a camera in the shower and one in the toilet, and I bug the phones, and I'm going to be watching and listening to everything you do so that I can then turn around and sell it, because that's going to be juicy content for my pornography business. But the rooms are free. If I were to say that, and of course everybody in the room went, nah, you know what, I think I'd rather pay the $150, $200 a night for a real hotel room with real privacy where I could shut the door and know nobody's watching me. So that's really how you need to be viewing these email services, that yep. they're free for the same reason that a pornography hotel would be free. And it is worth money to pay to actually have the ability to shut the door, draw the blinds, and know that you are actually alone and not being watched by anybody. And I think everybody has that right in their communications, just like they do in their lodgings.
How will NASA and other agencies treat the StartMail user?
Yeah, well, this is a good point, because StartMail, and by the way, you said StartMail. People do that all the time, but I just want to clarify. It's Start, like Start Protecting Your Privacy, StartMail, StartMail.com. And the good news here, normally I would tell people, you know, I'm a true blue American, and I normally try to buy American, and I tell people to buy American. The one place where you probably don't want to do that is with your Internet services, because the NSA and the FISA courts and the Patriot Act and the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI and all of these U.S. government agencies have been leaning very heavily on any kind of Internet company whose corporate offices are based in the U.S., and they've threatened people like Marissa Mayer, who is the CEO now of Yahoo, came from Google. They've threatened the executives at Google, at Microsoft. They've threatened them with jail time if they did not comply and open up a back door to give access to these agencies. And they were able to threaten jail time because U.S. citizens are subject to U.S. law and can go to jail if they fail to comply with it. So if they tell you, build in a backdoor, give us access to all your users' information and keep that secret and don't breathe a word of it, then you have to comply. The good news about StartMail is that we are based in Europe. So we're based in the Netherlands, in Holland. So we are not directly under U.S. jurisdiction at all. So if the NSA were to come to StartMail and say, hey, build a backdoor, we'd say fly a kite. Not only that, we can't build a backdoor because of how we engineered the system, because we engineered it with that threat in mind. If we got a warrant or a judge's order from the U.S., we would say take a hike. And the good news is that in Europe, privacy is very strongly protected by law. Over here, you go to jail if you don't turn over information to the government. Over in Europe, companies and executives with companies have gone to jail for sharing information that should have been kept private of their users. So it's a very different environment over there. It's a great place to be based. Privacy law is strong and thriving in Europe, believe it or not. And that's one of the reasons why they're so upset with all these American companies, because it's just it doesn't match with their worldview. So we're based in Europe, and what will the NSA do? Well, we hope to be so huge that it wouldn't make sense to spy on everyone. And I think we're on the road to doing that. We have when we first opened up StartMail for beta testing, we wanted to just get a couple thousand people on board to kick the tires and test it out and just let us know what they thought. We opened up the beta test period, and within a matter of literally weeks, we had to shut it down when we had over 50,000 people clamoring for a StartMail account. So we closed down the beta testing. We said, all right, all you 50,000 people chomping at the bit and pounding on our doors, we will go ahead and roll out free 90-day beta trial accounts to all of those people. We're doing that now. And if 50,000 people signed up before, and we didn't even do a big media push or anything. We didn't do an advertising campaign. It was just word of mouth, got 50,000 people busting down our doors. So I'm hoping that people will wake up to the reality of what these other email services are, realize that if we're going to retain our privacy, we are going to have a different kind of Internet that is not entirely free, but that actually does involve people paying for services rendered, because somebody's got to pay for it. And if that isn't you, then you know that you are the product. So it's really important that people get this notion. We're taking a gamble. You know, will people be willing to actually pay $5 a month for email? We will find out. We've spent a fortune developing this. We've got some of the brightest security and technology experts on the planet working on this program, putting it all together. And we're taking a big gamble here. But I'm hoping that people will do it. And if we get 10 million, 50 million, 100 million users on here, then the NSA would be absolutely stymied. There's no way that they would be able to access and surveil and decrypt all of that amount of traffic. It would be completely impossible. In fact, even if they just grab one message from one user and attempt to decrypt the PGP encryption, it can literally take months for just one email. Some even say it could take years. And even when they crack into one of your emails, we put a special kind of encryption on there so that if they crack the code for one email and then they grab your second email, the same code won't just unlock it. So they'll have to start all over again and spend another couple of years to crack that one. So there's really no way that they can keep up with millions and millions of emails through a fully functioning PGP encrypted StartMail program.
I think it's wonderful what you're doing, and I'm glad that we have something like this. I was talking about it with a group of people at lunch today, and it's funny. The responses were mixed. Some people said, well, I don't have anything to hide. I don't care if anybody reads my email. It's like people miss the point. I think Americans are too accepting of the fact that we're being spied on without our consent.
I also wondered, was it Ipswich? Last time you were...
Ixquick, yeah. Ixquick and StartPage. So StartMail is our mail, and Ixquick, I-X-Q-U-I-C-K, and StartPage are our search engine alternatives to Google, and I guess I haven't even talked about those yet.
Well, I remember the last time you were on, you did, and we spoke about it, and so, yeah, SmartPage it was. And... But I actually used that for quite some time. But what happened was I found that I couldn't access a number of things, you know, with it, with a start page.
Were you trying StartPage or IxQuick?
Both. I went to both, actually. But I think I used both. But but there were some things that I couldn't get access to on the Internet, certain pages, certain things, you know what I mean?
Here's the interesting thing, and let me explain that. So StartPage, S-T-A-R-T-P-A-G, StartPage.com, is a search engine just like Google. It's got a search window where you type in your question or your search term. And what we do is we take your search term and we send it over to Google and we get Google results for you. So Google never sees you. They only see us making the request. We bring you the answers. We scrub away all the tracking cookies and other things, and then we serve you the clean results. And then we delete all records of your visit. So we don't know at the end of the day who's even been on our website or searched for what, so there's no records there.
Well,
what's interesting, I'm sorry?
All your history is erased of all your searching?
Yes, so we keep no record of anyone's searches. We don't know what phrases were searched for. We don't know who was on our website. We don't know how many searches people did. We don't use tracking cookies. We don't store your IP address. And so there's really no way for anyone to know what you search for when you search with StartPage. So that's the good news. Now, here's the part that's a little bit interesting. You mentioned that the results are not as good as Google results. And that's actually not our fault, because we actually purchase something called Google Syndicated Search Feed. And that means that we make a very, very, very small payment for each search that we submit to Google. And because they're not being paid by advertisers, remember, you're beholden to the person who pays you, they give us the results without all of the advertising rigmarole and spying, because they're getting paid in a different way. So when we take those results from Google, we do not modify them in any way. We take exactly what Google gives us, and we serve exactly that Google response onto your screen. So what's interesting about that is that if you are not finding the results that you want with StartPage, and yet you are finding those results with Google, that it may be the case that Google is trying to get you to stop using StartPage and go right back to where they can spy on you again, because it's completely up to them what results they give us to give you. So if you don't like the results, it is Google intentionally trying to water down, potentially, the results that are available there as a way to discourage people from doing private searching.
That's exactly what I saw, what I felt was happening, because I went through SmartPage, and then certain things were abridged and very, and some weren't. I didn't even get any results from, and that was through Google, and then also through I couldn't get Bing or anything else like that. Any other search page, they seemed to have problems there. Or lack of information, you know, there wasn't as many results, and I wondered about that.
My experience, I don't use Google ever, and so it's very easy to use StartPage because I don't have a basis of comparison. I've been using StartPage since 2009. And so for me, we don't say Google it around here. We say StartPage it. I actually helped to create StartPage in 2009. Before that, we had IxQuick.com, which we still have. IxQuick sometimes gives you better results because they're not results from Google. We take those results from a multitude of smaller search engines and combine them together for you. So I found that IxQuick, if I can't find what I'm looking for on StartPage, I can almost always find it on IxQuick. And I suppose on some level, Once you've made a decision to boycott a company, or once you've drawn a line in the sand and said, I simply will not go back, then I think your goals change a little bit. My goal currently is to do the thing that I know in my heart and my spirit is the best thing to do for not only myself and my privacy, but the country as a whole. If everyone were to simply go back to Google because the search results were what they were looking for and they couldn't tolerate an occasional not getting the thing they're looking for, then Google is going to continue to dominate the entire Internet the way it does. Some say they dominate up to 80% of the funding that flows through the Internet. That's a lot of domination.
Wow.
And here's the phrase that I use for this. I call it the privacy tax. And here in New Hampshire, we have toll booths. And some people put the toll transponders, the little toll tags, in their windshield, which are tracking devices. And other people, like myself, pay the cash and pay a little extra surcharge. They charge us more. And we have to roll up to the window and roll down the window and hand the cash to the person and slow down and actually go through that way. And I've had some people say, well, why would you bother doing that? Why not just zip on through with the toll thing? And I say, well, I'm paying the privacy tax. If I want to keep something alive in this world, I have to be willing to sacrifice a little bit to use it. So in that case, if I want to keep the option of untracked travel through the state of New Hampshire, if I want to keep that option open because someday I may need it or because I want to keep it open for other people, I have to exercise that now. And I always say privacy, use it or lose it. If you want to keep privacy and you want to keep search engines like StartPage and IxQuick available, not only for you but for your children, for posterity, for other people, then you have to use them. And you can't just say, well, that wasn't quite convenient enough or that wasn't quite good enough. I'm going to go back to this other thing, because every time you use a service or shop at a store or patronize a company whose policies you find abhorrent, they could care less what you think in your heart or in your head or what you say to your friends. They care about what you do, what you click on. So hate me all you want. Just spell my name right. You know, say whatever you want about Google. Just use it. That's their thinking. So they don't care how much you hate them or how nasty their policies are or how much people know that, as long as they just keep searching there. That's all they care about.
Yeah, you made a really good point. I wondered, are you reaching out to young people at all, because they're growing up in a world where they accept being surveyed?
Well, that's all intentional. All of that was very carefully crafted, from the Big Brother TV shows to the reality shows to everything else. They've been fed this idea. In fact, I have a friend in Texas whose daughter attends a public high school there. And her daughter came home horrified, told her mother about the mother was horrified, but the daughter came home and told about a poster that was on the wall in the ninth grade English class. And it's a big poster, and it said, "A life not watched is not worth living." Really? That's an interesting concept to be putting into the heads of 14 and 15-year-old kids. So we're really, unless our generation takes the accumulated wisdom and knowledge that we have from having lived in a world where people did have privacy, where you could walk down the street and not have a video camera spying on you, where you could drive down the street and not have license plate cameras, where you could obtain information anonymously and privately. Unless we pass along those values and explain to young people why those values matter and why those things are important, and unless we take an active role in doing that, the people who profit from the data of these young people will drown us out, because they have nothing to gain whatsoever. Let's think about who's influencing kids. You've got parents, government.
You've got
Government is government schools, right? So you've got government schools educating them, or so-called educating them. You've got Madison Avenue, which is all the advertisers having a huge influence on them, and Hollywood by extension. So they have all of these forms of so-called education or messaging. And if you think about it, the government schools certainly have no interest in making your kids want privacy, and making your kids be independent and causing them to question authority. Their vested interest is in having your children open their backpacks and turn over everything to the government and be an open book. And same thing is true with Madison Avenue. All the advertising and, by extension, the Hollywood and the television that it funds, all of that is based on as much information as they can know. It's the market research thing again. They want your kids to be open books, revealing everything about themselves. And there's plenty of examples. Disneyland right now has what they're calling a magic wristband. It's a total tracking device that goes on children's wrists as they walk around Disneyland, and it tracks their location. It tracks when they get on a ride, when they go to the bathroom, when they open up their hotel room, when they walk through the park. It's tracking them all day long. And rather than resist that, as the parents should be boycotting Disney until they get rid of this program, in my opinion, Instead, they're saying, oh, Jimmy, here's your new wristband. Look, it's purple, isn't that? That's your favorite color. And they're all excited about it on YouTube, showing how thrilling it is. And, oh, I'm never going to take it off. And, oh, it's my new wristband. It's ridiculous. So, obviously, Disney, it's not in Disney's interest to tell you to care about your privacy. They want to track you because by tracking you, they can make more money off of you. And there's an even more disturbing, darker twist to the whole Disney thing, which is they are actually involved in doing paramilitary research, basically. They're working with Carnegie Mellon University on all sorts of tracking technologies. They've invested $1 billion to outfit their parks with tracking technology. And what Disney is it's a closed environment. It's an entire sealed-off city where you can observe people in basically a captive environment that they will be in for 1, 2, or 3 days on end. And so it's the perfect place to test out these technologies. And in all of these cases, you asked about young people. Well, the only person that's going to tell a young person to protect their privacy is their parents. No one else is going to tell them that. The advertisers, the TV, the Hollywood, the schools, the Disneylands, no one else is going to say that because all of them want to profit off of your kids' personal information. And I think of it almost as a pound of flesh. If you're not paying for something with dollars, you are going to be paying for it with you. And that's what they want. They want to scoop off and scoop off and scoop off pieces of you and use you for their own purposes to make money off of you. It's repulsive. So unless we parents and we adult generation really ratchet up the volume and start countering some of these messages, by the time we are dead and gone, people aren't going to even remember what privacy was.
Well, they'll have no idea.
You know, the most amazing thing I ever, one of the most amazing facts that I ever came across was that every one of us, when we're born, our birth certificate is registered on the New York Stock Exchange. All right? And there's a number on our birth certificate, okay? And that's our birth number. And we are everybody in the United States, all right, is now is a commodity. Okay, every person is a commodity, and we are in debt. And the reason they do that is because we have been in 1933 when the United States declared bankruptcy. We became indebted to the Federal Reserve, and each one of us became registered as collateral. Okay, our entire lives, all the
work.
Earnings and work that we do for the rest of our lives, all the money and everything we make is a commodity that is.
And what a shocking thought that is, huh?
For real though. And see, we're under admiralty law. We were that's basically what we became. And by doing that, that's why they call it birth certificates, because it's a birth, like a ship is it's put in a port.
Or a stock certificate.
No, it's very true. And this is real. And we are stock. We're basically just commodity. So that's why they can get away with this. And not only that, but everything we do. The United States in 1865, I believe, became a corporation, right? That's why Lincoln was so, he was killed because he was so dead set, or one of the reasons he was killed, because he was dead set against the United States becoming a corporation. He hated corporations, but we became one at that. And now, and the reason people have driver's licenses and can be, every state is we agree when we take out a driver's license, get a driver's license, that we will abide by the laws of the corporation, all right? We no longer have sovereignty, okay? We do not have sovereignty. So, all this talk about privacy and rights and whatnot is nice to say, and we got a constitution, but, it's been so destroyed. it's almost a farce. I hate to say that, but people like yourself and God knows Lila and I have been fighting it for years, and
But I'm so glad you're bringing back some privacy
yeah,
for
it. A guy like Eric, like Snowden came along and, set fire to everything. It's a great thing that people are suddenly waking up and saying, holy cow, what did we give
away? Isn't it? I have to say, he is my personal hero. I just cannot believe that this man had the courage and had the morality and the care for the rest of us to sacrifice everything, a beautiful girlfriend, a great relationship with his parents, a well-paying job, a lovely home that he lived in. I'm sure he had a very nice car, too. I haven't seen his car, but I'm sure it was lovely. How this man handled one of the most shocking realities that has ever been exposed to the public. Here he was sitting on this gold mine of horror, of horrible information. And I think most people, well, everybody in the NSA was sitting on that information, and they all kept their mouths shut, and they all kept their heads low because they didn't want to run the risk of what would happen to them if they revealed it. And here's Edward Snowden, who knows that he is a hunted man. If he shows up in the wrong place, he will be assassinated. He is being hunted by one of the most intelligent, tentacular intelligence forces on planet Earth. And he knows what he's up against. He worked for them. He knows what they're capable of. He knows how they have their ears listening in every post, and yet he's still sacrificed and is willing to undergo that kind of persecution, really, for the rest of his life. So I have to say, hats off to Edward Snowden. He's absolutely my hero, and I'm horrified when I hear people wanting to call him a traitor or wanting to call him by these bad names, because what's really being a traitor is knowing that the agency that you're working for, that the work that you're doing, is directly violating the U.S. Constitution and U.S. law, directly violating the interests of the people that you've sworn to protect and serve, directly violating the interests of the future of your children, of humanity, and look the other way and pretend that you just don't see that. That, to me, is being a traitor.
Well, you're right. And, you know, but interestingly enough, prior to the new program, the NSA program, being able to survey everybody's phones in the whole world, there was one guy that invented it right around 9/11, okay? Right after 9/11, there was another program very similar to this program that the United States invented. And the guy that invented it, okay, when he realized what they were going to do with it, all right, and spy on every single American, which is what they did, he came out against it. He came public against it, okay? But you know what happened to him?
Mm.
He didn't get killed. And he got humiliated. They said it's ridiculous. They said, it didn't exist. And they told him personally, no one's going to believe you. And they
that's the other way. If they don't kill you, they discredit you. They discredit you. Sometimes I wonder what General Petraeus knew or was about to do when they revealed his affair. Because I'll tell you, at that high ranking level in the corrupt government, so many of those people are involved in affairs and shady dealings all over the place. Everybody knows it, and it's used as blackmail material. And if you don't play ball with them, then they reveal it. And when I saw General Petraeus fall because of that affair, and by the way, that happened because of a Gmail account that was compromised. The government was watching their Gmail account.
That's correct.
So that's interesting because, here's a man at the highest level of military intelligence, and he fully understood what they were capable of, and yet even his Gmail account was being watched and observed and was used against him to take him down. So you wonder when high-ranking people are taken down over various things, you know that there's something that they didn't play ball with or something they said no to. Because if they don't assassinate you in some plane crash or inject you with some kind of deadly poison that gives you cancer, then they just totally tarnish your reputation to the point where you are scandalized and you can't ever come back.
Or they say, oh, it's a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, but what the woman that he was, that was implicated with him, she was a Mossad agent, all right?
I didn't realize that. That's very interesting. I didn't know that.
She and her husband, okay, were both. That's why he didn't care that she
didn't divorce her.
He didn't divorce her or anything.
That was her job.
And she was well known. Community, but that was her job as a Mossad agent, okay? And she infiltrated him, wrote a book of his biography, okay? Got close to him, developed that affair, and then, you know, boom. And the reason that was is because Petraeus hated the Jewish lobby. He hated the Israeli alliance because he said it was utter detriment to the United States and the military, all right? Military forces. There were spies. There are Mossad spies everywhere throughout our military, right?
Right.
And he was disgusted by this, and not only him.
And he was about to come
out
publicly.
But the other guy named Thompson, I think it was Thompson, the other general that got defrocked as well. I think he was having an affair or something, adultery or something. Or
yeah. Other.
And. But this particular one, Petraeus, he was brought down by the classic Samson and Delilah. You know what I mean?
Well, it works. It works every time, I guess. If you don't have the morality and the backbone to say no to that, it's a pretty effective attack.
It worked for him.
Well, also you get to a position where you think you're not vulnerable.
Right.
He
was the head of intelligence. I mean, how much?
Exactly. Very, very true.
Enjoyed everything that you had to say tonight. It was really a treat to talk to someone who thinks the same way. And not only do you think the same way, but you're instrumental in creating something that. Ensures our privacy, and I'm sure many of our listeners appreciate this conversation.
When will this StartMail be available in the United States?
StartMail is going to be available by invitation only as soon as we roll out all the beta accounts. And the reason we're doing invitation only is because if we just open it up and let people give us payments, what we don't want to have happen is all of a sudden we have to fulfill 10 million accounts in 24 hours because we won't be able to do that. So we're going to be rolling it out gradually. So if the only way that you can get a StartMail account is by getting an invitation. And if you'd like to sign up to get an invitation, if you go to startmail.com, we still have an open invitation period now. If you go to startmail.com, watch the video. At the bottom of the page, there's a little form you can fill out. And if you mention this radio program and my name, Catherine Albrecht, we will go ahead and put you on the invitation list. And when it is available for purchase, you will receive an invitation. You can sign up as many times as you want, as long as each one is a different email address. You can sign up your friends if they would like to sign up. And you are under no obligation when the invitation comes out. So if when you do get an invitation, you change your mind or you're not interested, that's fine. We won't pester you or anything. But that way you'll at least have the option of getting an account.
We mentioned this radio show, the LA Steel Show,
Catherine Albrecht.
And your name.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So, and you do that at startmail.com there at the bottom. And I encourage people to sign up and get those invitations. And we're believing that it's going to be rolling out sometime this summer. I'm thinking probably June, in the June arena, we should have all of the 50,000 beta accounts issued and functioning. And then we'll switch over and start issuing paid accounts to the invitees.
Well, thank you very much for enlightening us. And I'm sure many of our listeners appreciated what you had to say. And you're always an interesting guest, Catherine.
Yes,
thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much. It was really a delight being on with you tonight. God bless you both, and thanks for all that you're doing to keep people informed. Have a good night.
Good night, Catherine.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Catherine Albrecht talking to us about startpage.com.
Yeah, and you can check out her web page, okay, which is spychips.com, all right? Also, you can go to SmartMail. pronounced that smart, StartMail.
StartMail, StartMail.com.
Yep.
And you can sign up for that. And if you watch the video, mention
the LA Steel,
LA Steel Show and mention Catherine Albrecht, and you will get an invitation to be able to have one of those accounts.
Right.
And remember, folks, you have to pay for what you get. If it's too good to be true, it usually isn't worth it. And that's what happened for us for an email.
Yahoo and Google, you
and everything
else. So, please go to, please check this out and be private. Oh, also, don't forget, you can go for, to be anonymous on the, on your browsing, okay, go to startpage.com, okay? And start, use startpage, and you can put that in as your default browser, and or your main page browser, and
use that. I just was doing it while she was talking. I went to it, and things come up just fine. And I think it's going to be well worth it, folks. You don't want that history. You don't, you know, as I said, if something's too good to be true. I always wondered why it was free, but then I never really thought about somebody spying on me.
Yeah,
I mean, talk about being naive.
Yeah.
I'm sure our listeners, maybe you're more sophisticated than I. I didn't realize what I was giving up, really.
Well, I did, but you had no choice. I mean, if you
apparently we did as of 2004, and we didn't know.
Not 2009.
She had Start Page already.
Oh, Start was 2009.
Oh, nine. I thought you said 2004.
No,
but anyway, that's a moot point. But thanks for being with
us. That's about when I started using Start, when we had her on and we talked about it.
Well, thanks for being with us, folks, and we've run over time.
Yeah.
But we'll talk to you tomorrow.
And
we hope you join us. We'll be doing some union news and business and some other news.
Yeah.
So have a good night, and thanks for being with us.